Trust Business Lunch with me, Jisook Yee. Hope you're hanging in there. It is Friday today, so TGIF. Let's get started right away and talk about the markets with our expert, Paul Nolte. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
We're hanging in there. Hope you're doing the same. Everybody well and healthy in your home?
So far, so good.
Very good. Of course, Paul is with Kingsview Wealth Management. And is the markets responding to the jobs report this morning?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really a surprise that the jobs report was going to be bad, and it certainly was. It was probably a little bit worse than people were expecting. The survey was middle part of last month, so some of the layoffs were coming already. We'll see worse numbers, obviously, when we get the next job report, so something to look forward to. But we're anticipating that we're going to see probably a 10, maybe 12% unemployment rate when we get to April, May. And again, it's just it's a function of slamming on the brakes and slowing everything to essentially a crawl. And it's really not necessarily a surprise in the numbers. I think what now a lot of people are trying to game plan for is what does it look like when we come out of this and we are then free to move about the country as well as around the globe, and what does that recovery look like?
This is so unprecedented for economists and also for, you know, folks like yourself who are trying to advise folks on, you know, their money and saving for retirement and their wealth, just because you're really having to deal with a situation that you've never had to take into account before, with the fact that you're watching this curve to see, you know, when things will get better in terms of health on the health front, and then also how long the shutdowns are going to be, right?
Yeah, it is. It does have some similarities to the financial crisis. It does have some similarities to, you know, maybe even the crash in 87. But there are some stark differences. Just with the speed at which it all happened is really what catches everybody off guard. And the fact that we're not free to move about. We're being asked to stay inside and trying to stay physically distant from people is something that's very unusual, different than 9/11, where we were encouraged to go out and spend and do things. So it is a very different environment from that perspective. And I think as we come out of this in another month, 2 months, 3 months, it's how do we handle things differently? It's going to be different when we come out. How different, how quickly are we willing to get onto a plane and sit next to somebody else who might be coughing? Those types of things, I think everybody's going to be on their guard for a while before we can maybe not get back to normal, but certainly get back to what passes for the new normal.
You're kind of in the middle of a waiting game right now. What are you saying to your clients and how are you advising folks?
Well, in a lot of cases, we've been sitting on some cash. We did raise some cash in February and March as the markets were coming down, and we're sitting patiently at this point. Over the next probably 3 to 6 months, we're going to put that back to work, and we're going to do it gradually. So we're not going to try to pick a bottom. Don't know where that's going to be. We think that the market bottoms sometime in the next 3 months or so. So our goal is to slowly stage those dollars back into the market, into the equity markets, some fixed income as well, and get their portfolios back to a normal allocation. So we think the equity markets over the next 3 to 5 years will do well, especially relative to bonds. We think there are certainly a lot of growth opportunities in the U.S. We haven't shut that down completely. So we want to take advantage of that. So a lot of companies have come down 40-50%, some even more than that, are still in pretty good shape. So we're trying to find those companies, but more broadly, trying to participate in the market in a very gradual and reasoned fashion over the next few months.
Paul, I know that you're also an expert on personal finance. You advise folks on debt and how to save money. This was a question from our general manager, Mary, that she brought up. What if people are fine right now because they're dipping into their savings, but you know, the outlook, you said this could be months. What about 3, 4, 5 months from now? What if they run out of money?
Yeah, and that's part of what the government's trying to backstop. You know, that's part of some of the longer-term programs that the government's putting in place. Certainly, you want to have your investment set up so that you can draw on those as you need to, but you do want to try to cut back a little bit as you can, and hopefully, as this comes out, we're able to get most of the workforce back working again so we can get that money coming in. So it's going to be a tough way to take a look at how this unfolds. But certainly the Federal Reserve, by cutting interest rates and doing a lot of things on their side, federal government doing a lot of things there and throwing out $2 trillion, and there's talk of more, are very much behind the individual, small business companies in trying to soften the blow over the next few months here.
Kingsview Wealth Management, Paul Nolte, thanks so much for being with us, Paul, and stay safe.
You too.
Let's dive a little bit deeper into this March jobs report. Joining us now is Mark Hamrick. He's a senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. How are you doing, Mark?
Hey, doing great, G. How about you?
Doing well. So glad everyone's well in your family. Everyone's healthy and safe.
Absolutely, thank God, and hope yours is as well.
Absolutely, yes. So we dived into it just a little bit, but let's go a little bit deeper with you. So tell us, break down this March jobs report.
Well, of course, let's put it in context before we do that, and I know you've been talking about this, and that is that the data that's collected for our monthly employment reports is typically fine. It's done around the 12th of the month, and this was the case, obviously, in the month of March. We also know that every day has felt like a month itself, and some of the rapidly unfolding events in the economy, as we're talking about the economy right now, as opposed to the health crisis itself, some of these events have really been quite dramatic, and so the 12th of the month of March feels like a lifetime ago. But having said that, we still want to examine what the report told us, and it was much worse than expected, even though it's in a way in the rearview mirror. And so more than 700,000 jobs were lost. The unemployment rate skyrocketed to 4.4%. That was the largest single monthly increase since 1975. As we might have expected, leisure and hospitality, which is a definition that the Labor Department applies in terms of categorizing these jobs, the biggest number of jobs were lost there, more than 450,000. Retail lost 46,000. But there's plenty of pain across the board. So my point is about this, that as we've been reporting weekly jobless claims numbers, the numbers that portray the number of individuals who filed first-time claims for unemployment benefits have totaled 10 million for the previous 2 weeks. So we know that when we eventually get to the April jobs report a month from now, that's where the real feeling of the disaster is going to break through.
So when we're hearing that, of course, these numbers are going to get far worse, that's why, because those recent numbers haven't been included.
Absolutely. It's truly a look in the rearview mirror. But, you know, this is a situation, I think about this from a journalist standpoint, but also just everyday Americans, that, you know, there are times when the data really does correlate well to reality, and there are times when the data fails to capture what's actually happening on the ground. And at least with this one March job report, we know that the situation has gotten much worse since then. So it was good for what it was in the early part of the month, but we've kind of moved on from that. And unfortunately, with respect to the economy, it's been a deterioration.
I was reading, and of course, you are the expert, so you explain this to me. I was reading also that there's another figure in the jobs report that can paint even a gloomier picture of what's happening right now with the coronavirus pandemic. They said the Labor Department uses a household survey also to kind of, what can you break that down a little bit?
Well, I don't know if one part would be gloomier than another, but
right.
To the point, when we're talking about two surveys really that's generating one report, mm-hmm. The enterprise survey, the establishment survey, is the one that tells us the number of jobs that are added, because that's obviously the only source where you can determine or define jobs that are added, both at the enterprise level and then broadly at the national level. And then for the household survey, that's the one from which the unemployment statistic itself is generated. So, you know, to be terribly blunt about it, I think that, you know, much of this is really stale news, you know, because we've been able to look at the weekly mm-hmm. unemployment claims, and I know those have been every bit as significant for the state of Illinois as they have been at the national level. Plenty of reporting on that, of course, here in recent days. And so for the audience, I think that, you know, you'll want to keep an eye on these weekly jobless claims numbers that are released every Thursday morning at 8:30 Eastern Time, 7:30 Central, of course. And there's every reason that these are going to continue to number in the millions. And for every additional week where the stay-at-home orders are in place, and obviously we know, you know, on a national basis, we're talking about, you know, 3 weeks plus going out from here. You know, there's kind of a global fight against the virus right now, but there's also, let's say at the national and local levels, a global struggle for enterprises and individuals to remain solvent. And so that was one of the chief goals, broadly speaking, of the $2 trillion economic relief measure called the CARES Act, which was really trying to avoid some of the political faux pas of efforts that were made during the great financial crisis, and to try to help individuals as well as to try to keep businesses operating. And obviously the political fallout will be determined in the months and years ahead from this, as they were after the New Deal and after the measures taken during the financial crisis. But I do think political leaders are trying to be more mindful about addressing the needs of individuals. How effective they are with that, of course, remains to be seen.
Mark Hamrick, he's the senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. And Mark, we haven't had your take yet on the CARES bill. And also, yeah, when you saw that 10 million unemployment claim number, what did you think?
Yeah, and of course, that's broken down basically 3.3 million in the previous week and more than 6 million in the number we got 24 hours ago. I'm kind of in the mode right now where I'm already shocked, so nothing can really further shock me, but things can surprise me. And really, there were not many economists who were looking for either the numbers that we got today or the magnitude of the jobless claims that we got yesterday. So what does that tell us? Number one is that people who are much smarter than I don't have models from which they can really generate good forecasts right now. And that really gets back to the sort of trying to align our intuition or personal experiences to what's actually happening. And that is to say that, you know, we know it's bad and, you know, the numbers are just going to, you know, fall in line with our understanding of the reality. So, I think that we just need to brace ourselves for further bad news and, to some degree, hope that as a country that we can rebound from this. And I do think that there are some reasons to the earliest part of your question to be encouraged by, first of all, the Federal Reserve having the experience and resources to not only sort of redeploy its crisis playbook, much of which was gleaned from the experience of over a decade ago, but I would even say, at least in my mind, the surprising bipartisan response on the part of the Congress, you know, coming at a time when we haven't always had a lot of great reasons to be confident that our elected leaders would put their partisan differences aside, but the $2 trillion embodied in the CARES Act, I think, was a good first attempt at sort of coming up with a relief measure. We know that, for example, today there are some issues that are emerging with respect to the deployment of small business loans that are part of that. But, you know, it's a kind of a global game of whack-a-mole right now, right? And so the first thing you have to do is identify problems. And then you come up with the solutions. And as a country, we have a great deal of both, I would say, intellectual capital as well as financial capital that can be deployed. And we've won wars before, and I have every bit of confidence that we will get through this. But there will be some long-lasting, both economic, financial, and political repercussions.
Definitely counting on all of you smart people to help us pull us through this. So thanks so much for talking with us. Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com. Stay well. Appreciate you talking to us, Mark.
Very kind. My pleasure. And you do the same. Thanks so much.
Thank you. So today is the day that the Small Business Administration said that small businesses can start applying for the Paycheck Protection Program. But hearing that banks, including Chase and Capital One, say they can't accept applications yet. So to break down everything in the Paycheck Protection Program, say that 10 times fast, is Nicole P. Marwell. She's an associate professor at the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration. Hi, Nicole. How are you?
I'm fine, G. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being with us. There's so much confusion. The details are confusing and banks don't have the answers right now. So what's going on?
Well, I'd say, G, that the small business community is really getting a crash course in policy implementation right now. When Congress passes legislation like they did with the Paycheck Protection Program, once it's passed by Congress, it's the president's administration's job to make sure that it works. And as you said, the Paycheck Protection Program applications are supposed to be open today, but we're not seeing that happening yet. And this is a situation where I think the Trump administration's capacity for the implementation of new programs is really going to matter. The Trump administration is relying on the banking sector to get money on the street to small businesses, but right now the banks are saying they don't have the information that they need to be able to do that. And so the bottom line here for small businesses is that if the Trump administration can't work out these implementation challenges, money is not going to be flowing to the small businesses that desperately need it.
So folks are actually trying to apply for the for these loans by going to the bank, but the bank is saying that right now they just don't have the guidance from the Treasury. So what are some of the hangups right now, or do you even know?
Well, do I even know is a good question. There is just so much uncertainty around this, but let me see if I can walk your listeners through at least a couple of the things that we think are going on. Right now, the way that businesses are supposed to apply for a Paycheck Protection Program loan is through a lender. And so the banks are saying, well, it's our obligation not only to support small businesses this way, but also to safeguard the nation's system of credit. And right now, the guidance that we're getting and the assurance that we're getting from the Trump administration feels too risky to us. And so they're very wary, the banks are, of processing these loan applications because they're the ones who are having to attest to the creditworthiness of businesses. And so if the banks don't feel comfortable with the level of risk that they're taking on, it's pretty clear that they're not going to be processing loans.
Assuming that the reason why I said, and you might not even know, is just because everything is so fluid as they try to implement this, which had support from both sides, thank goodness, because certainly small businesses do need the help. How long is this going to take, I guess, in terms of figuring out what the guidance is and actually getting loans to small business owners that need it?
Well, I wish that I had a good answer on that question, but it's really going to depend on how well the Treasury Department and the Small Business Administration in the Trump administration are going to be able to come to an agreement with the banks where both sides are saying, okay, we've worked out the rules of implementation, we're going to be doing it this way, and the banks are going to say, okay, we're willing to put our money out on the street knowing that we're going to get it back from the government at some later point in time. And so I wish that I could say when that was going to happen, but I really don't have any more information on that, given that this is also new and so fluid.
Right.
I'm hoping that, you know, the banks will really be clear with the Trump administration about what they need and that the Trump administration will be able to provide them with the necessary assurances.
Well, let's back up a little bit and just talk about the specifics of the program and who can apply and how folks should try to apply.
Yes, great. So let's assume that all these implementation issues do get worked out.
I'm sure that they have to work it out because the small businesses are desperate need of help.
Oh, they really are. I mean, here in Illinois, I don't know if you've seen the stats, but small businesses employ about 45% of the Illinois workforce. It's 2.5 million employees. And Illinois nonprofits are also eligible for these Paycheck Protection Program loans. The nonprofits are employing about 11% of the Illinois workforce, about 600,000 employees. So between those two sectors of the economy, small business and nonprofits, we're talking about over half of Illinois workers. So it's really important that the Trump administration and the banks figure out how to get this money on the street.
So help is on the way, but it's just taking a little extra time to get sorted out. Of course, this is a very complex situation.
Yes. So, but once this gets worked out, and let's hope it happens soon, these Paycheck Protection Program loans are going to be administered by the federal agency, the Small Business Administration, under their existing 7A loan program. These loans will go to small businesses and also to nonprofit organizations that have fewer than 500 employees. And a very important point for folks to know is that the loans must be processed through an SBA-approved lender, a lender or a bank that's been approved already by the Small Business Administration. So if you're a small business or a nonprofit, you should really check with your existing bank to see if they are an SBA-approved lender and to see if they can help you process a loan to the Paycheck Protection Program.
And Nicole, I'm hearing there's a real place for smaller banks and community banks in this process as well, hopefully.
Well, I'm hoping that that's the case. Right now, you know, we're hearing from some of the really big banks, Chase and Bank of America and Wells Fargo, about the problems regarding the implementation assurances. But I'm hoping that small banks, if they are approved by SBA to do loans under this program already, that they can be a real conduit for small businesses and nonprofits. I'm here down in Hyde Park, and I'm thinking about the Hyde Park Bank, for example. They are, I know, a federally approved SBA lender, and so I'm hoping that they're really going to be able to have the capacity to help nonprofits and small businesses put these loans in and get that money out to them.
Let's hope so. Nicole P. Marwell, she's associate professor at the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration, and we're going to be talking more about resources for small businesses and nonprofit organizations, and she's going to be breaking down the Paycheck Protection Program a bit more. But first, we're going to do this. The Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program, that's what we're talking about. And joining us is Nicole P. Marwell. She's the associate professor at the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration. And Nicole has really been studying and poring over this provision of the CARES Act. And you were telling us about who's eligible and who can apply and where to apply.
Yes. So the spirit of the Paycheck Protection Act is to allow employers to keep their employees on by paying them their full wages and maintaining their benefits, which is really important for when the business is able to reopen. And a really important point about this loan that everyone should really listen up for is that these loans, they're called loans, but they're intended to be forgivable, right? If you spend the Paycheck Protection loan on the costs that you're intended to, then at the end of the term of the loan, it will be forgiven. You do not have to pay it back. Okay? You won't owe any money, either principal or interest, but it's very important that if you're going to get that loan forgiven, you have to maintain spending from those loan proceeds in the way that the administration intends.
Nicole, so just quickly, there is a question. I've got a text question from the 815. Do these loans only cover full-time employees or, part-time employees too?
They can cover full-time and part-time employees. What the main cost that you should be paying with these loans is what they're calling payroll costs. And that covers salaries to employees, wages to employees, commissions, tips, right? All those things for both full-time or part-time employees. There is, however, a limit per employee. If your employee earns more than $100,000 a year, there's a cap at the $100,000. You can't use money from the PPP loan to pay any employee part of their salary that goes over $100,000 for an annual period. Right. So in addition to salaries and wages, the loan funds from the PPP can also go for state and local taxes that have been assessed on employee compensation, so those payroll taxes. It can be used to pay group health care benefits. This is what helps you keep your employees on their medical insurance. You can also use these funds to pay retirement benefits, the employer part of retirement benefits. And also you can use those funds to pay sick leave, parental leave, family or medical leave, and even vacation time.
Okay, so that covers a lot. I've been hearing from a lot of small business owners and their fears of, because profit margins are so small and they don't know how long this is going to go on, they do really want to take a loan, but then they also fear taking on more debt. And of course, this is a fluid situation. Both sides of the aisle came together to pass this CARES Act, which was very important to saving the American economy. Of course, small businesses are the fabric of what makes America so unique and diverse and great. But because things are so fluid right now, a lot of small business owners are telling me that they're a little bit worried about the fine print in terms of in the terms and conditions. So, are you finding that's also something that needs to be looked out for, or is this truly going to be forgiven? I guess what I'm saying, what threshold do small business owners have to meet in order for it to be forgiven?
Yeah, well, it's always important to read the fine print, that's for sure. And in terms of this particular loan, again, as you say, the situation is fluid. The guidance that's coming out of SBA and Treasury continues to evolve. But here's some basic things that listeners can take away. The PPP is designed to allow you to keep your employees paid, keep them on payroll for a period of 8 weeks. And so when you apply for the loan, what you're going to request is a loan that's about 2.5 times your average monthly payroll costs. So let's say, for example, your annual payroll is $120,000. That means your average monthly payroll is $120,000 divided by 12, or $10,000. If you multiply that average monthly payroll of $10,000 by this 2.5 number, you're going to come out with a $25,000 loan that you should be asking for. And what they're saying with this is that, you know, if you make the request, your request has to be documented in terms of average monthly payroll. And then you're going to get, when the money comes in, you use that money to pay your employees, spending at least 75% of that money on the direct payroll costs. But there's going to be a little money also left over, which you can also use to spend on rent or mortgage interest, if those are in, if those have been in existence since before February 15th of this year. You can also use a little bit of the money to pay for utilities. But you have to be really careful. Don't plan to spend any more than 25% of your total loan on these non-payroll costs, or you might find yourself with some of those loan proceeds not being forgivable.
So that threshold is probably the most important one. That's absolutely key.
Yes, very key. This is really intended to help keep people employed and to help small businesses not have to go out and look for new employees when they're ready to open again.
Okay,
so that's why you're going to be looking at 75% minimum of this loan to be spent directly on those payroll costs I went through earlier.
Okay, so Nicole, we got a couple of text questions, and of course, the caveat is that things are fluid, so you may not quite know the answer, but we're going to give it a go. This is from the 574. Can owners of an LLC use a loan to cover payroll for themselves?
That is a question that you should definitely double check. There is a provision in there for you to pay yourself as an employer, but again, that $100,000 limit is very critical. But I would really advise that you double check that, because that's a question that I'm not 100% sure on.
Okay, this is from the 815. What happens if after the 2-month time period, you're not able to go back to work and keep your employees employed?
Yes, that's a great question. My prediction, and this is just a prediction, is that as the pandemic keeps rolling out, if we see that thinking about going back to work in 2 months is not going to happen, hopefully the administration will and Congress will get together and put more money into this program. But right now, it's just those 2 months. And at the end of that period, if you're not open for business again, I think you really will face a challenge in terms of keeping your employees on payroll, because there won't be more than that amount of money from this program.
From the 708, can you include as part of your payroll costs the employer's part of the health insurance?
Yes, that is my understanding.
Okay. Okay. This is from actually from the 815, but I think she wants us to use her name. Hi, Cheryl in Rockford. If we've been laid off part time, but have kept some full time people on, do you know if all part time employees have to be back at by June 30th at the same rate? I guess.
Yeah. So this is. I'm glad that question came up, because this is also a really important piece of that. So, a lot of businesses and nonprofits have laid off their employees already. This program is designed to get you to bring those folks back on payroll. And so when you apply, you should use your average monthly payroll when you had the number of employees that you think you're actually going to have moving forward. Whether that's the exact same number of employees you had before the crisis hit is hard to say, but you do want to apply for the number of employees that you think are going to be back with you once business keeps going, hopefully before June 30th. And then what you have to do, you apply for the loan. When the money comes in, you need to rehire those laid off employees, and you have to do the rehiring before June 30th. If you don't rehire employees who you plan to pay with funds from the Paycheck Protection Program, if you don't rehire them before June 30th and you've asked for money to pay them, then you are going to be in a situation where that part of the loan is not forgivable.
Here's another question from the 630. My husband is an independent contractor. He's working now, and we don't know if he'll be let go. Should he apply, and if granted, can he hold the money and only use it if he's let go?
Well, independent contractors are different from regular employees. And the guidance I'm seeing from Treasury, I think I saw the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin on a press conference yesterday saying that next week the Treasury Department plans to issue specific guidance relevant for independent contractors.
Okay, and from the 630, I'm an essential business and still running at full schedule with full employment. Am I still eligible for the loan?
No.
Okay.
If you haven't had your business take a hit from this, and you haven't laid off employees, I very much doubt that you would be eligible for this loan.
And from the 630, hi, if your loan is forgiven, is this considered income for the company?
Oh, that's a good one. I would have to defer on that to your accountant, but I believe that the answer to that question is yes, it will be counted as income. But again, you should really check with your accountant on that one.
Okay, and finally from the 630, would you please ask if the loans would work for landlords to help pay mortgages when renters don't pay?
Yeah, that is also an interesting question. I have seen some things going around about this. I think perhaps, I'm not sure if the Paycheck Protection Loan Program would work for that scenario, but I'm fairly certain that another program run by the SBA, the Economic Injury Disaster Loans, are being open to rental companies. But those loans, unfortunately, are not forgivable, although they do have a fairly low interest rate at 3.75% for small business and 2.75% for nonprofits.
Well, Nicole, you've been so helpful. Nicole Marwell, she's associate professor at the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration. The questions are still pouring in. Where can people find you or find more information on how to get their questions answered?
Well, there's a couple of great websites that they can look at, aside from the websites of Treasury.gov and SBA.gov. They can also look at the website of the Small Business Majority. That's smallbusinessmajority.org. And then the University of Chicago is going to be running a Small Business Boot Camp webinar series starting next week. They can look for information at bit.ly/smallbusinessbootcamp.
We'll put all that information on our WGN Radio webpage. Thank you, Nicole, so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.